Welcome to episode 22 of the Choose FI radio podcast, the ultimate guide to the true cost of car ownership.
You're listening to Choose FI radio. The blueprint for financial independence lives here. If you're looking to unlock the secrets to financial independence and early retirement, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and join a community of like-minded people who are getting off the hamster wheel and taking control of their lives in the pursuit of financial independence. Choose FI, your home for financial independence online.
All right, guys, and we're back. Brad's back here with me in the studio today. And today we're going to be taking a look at the true cost of car ownership. Now, it's no secret that we believe spending too much money on a monthly car payment is one of the worst things you can possibly do with your hard-earned money. But in the FI community, we look at not only what the problem is, but we also try to come up with a solution. So today we're going to be talking with Brad, and he's going to be setting the stage for us on exactly how you can win with cars. And we're going to take a look at it from the high-level perspective, and then we're going to dig down into the weeds and show you exactly how much your car is actually costing you. So Brad, welcome to the studio. How are you doing today, buddy?
Hey, Jonathan, I'm doing great. Doing great. How about you?
Pretty good. Now, let's go ahead and set this up because we're sourcing this from two different places. One of the sources was an article that you wrote years ago, at least several years ago, on one of your other sites, Richmond Savers. And the name of that article, which we'll link to in the show notes, was "How Much Does Your Car Payment Really Cost You?" And the second half of this conversation is going to be from an article that I've been piecing together and I'm going to release on Choose FI within the next month called "The True Cost of Car Ownership." And with those two articles combined, with these superpowers combined, we're going to be able to take a look at both what the compound interest says about the long-term picture of car payments, as well as down in the weeds with exactly what your car and your specific situation is actually costing you, because everybody has different situations and sometimes it's hard to figure out, well, okay, that's fine for that story, but how does this actually affect me? So I'm excited that you're going to be able to get this thing rolling for us. How do you want to start?
Yeah, well, I think that's a good lead in. I think this should be a really interesting episode. I think the two different perspectives of, you know, mine, when I approached this and I wrote this article about 3 years ago at this point, you know, I was thinking from the FI perspective, which is the long-term perspective, you know. And what's cool about your analysis is it really dives into the yearly costs, like the actual costs. And I think that is something that I would have never approached. So I'm really excited to hear you talk through it. So, you know, I'll just set up kind of my kind of high level overview of how I approach this problem. And I was just trying to come up with, like, what does constantly buying new cars, or, like, you know, I've heard this term, and, you know, I don't know if this is a real term or not, but, like, you know, manage the payments. Like, I've always heard that about, you know, how people talk about their cars, and it's looking at life more as like a cash flow issue, you know, like your personal finances is a cash flow issue, which is, you know, I can spend X number of hundreds of dollars a month on my car, and that's just what I spent, you know. And unfortunately, I think that's what a lot of people do, right? They, you know, somehow manage their payments with the amount they can trade in on their old car and what kind of new car they're getting. And they don't think about it in terms of, like, an overall financial picture. It's just, okay, I want to spend $300 a month on my car payment. What do I have to do to get there? And that's, like, a really small-time myopic thinking that is, like, the exact opposite of what people in the FI community do. So, you know, I kind of set up this kind of side-by-side example here. And actually, what's funny is, going back to it, I realized that my example isn't even actually stark enough. Because I actually, in the good example, the FI example, I have the person buying a new car basically every 15 years and not taking our advice, Jonathan, and buying a used car or a lightly used car that already has a lot of the depreciation off of it. So, you know, I think if I were to do this again for Choose FI, it would be an even bigger number at the end of this example. And you guys are going to be blown away by the number as it is. And I think it would be significantly higher. So, yeah, that was a kind of a cool takeaway. But basically what I do is I just set this up where, you know, there's person A and person B, basically. Person A is the FI example. They're buying a new car on day one, and they're spending $300 a month in car payments. So, you know, just back of the envelope, assuming 0% interest, this is an $18,000 car. So what is that, Jonathan? Like a Honda Civic nowadays, thereabouts?
Yeah, brand new. I think that gets you, that would get you a Honda Civic. We could look up the purchase price on that, but I'm sure if you get a baseline Honda Civic model, that'd be about 18 grand brand new.
Okay. All right. So that's, you know, kind of the background. So, you know, they have that car payment for 5 years. And then for the next 10 years, because we're saying that this car is going to last for 15 years. Now, again, this is, you know, my little sidebar is in all likelihood, that car is going to last more than 15 years. I know my Honda Civic is an 03. It's coming up on 14 years now. And I expect to drive that thing forever. It's going strong. So, you know, this I set this up, this example up as conservatively as possible. So anyway, from year 6 through year 15, they're taking that $300 a month and they're investing it in Vanguard low-cost index funds. And, you know, I'm assuming for this hypothetical that it's a compound interest rate of 8%. That's kind of what we use here at ChooseFI. We don't want to be overly optimistic and say 10 or 12%. You know, 8% seems to be a pretty reasonable estimation. So, you know, and then person B basically is managing the payments, right? They're paying $300 a month forever. And now whether that's on a new car that they then, you know, sell and roll over into another new car X number of years down the road, or they're just leasing a car indefinitely, you know, whatever it is, their cash flow outlay is $300 a month forever.
Okay.
So, you know, that's kind of the setup. And I actually did this over a 45-year period. So I figured that person A would have three of those cycles, right? They bought a new car on year one, in year 16, and year 31. Okay, so, you know, fairly straightforward, right? There's nothing kind of crazy going on there. That, you know, the person over their life has three new cars that they held on to for 15 years each, right? Sounds reasonable?
Let me just make sure I'm on the same page. So I'm with you. So basically, in person B, it's super simple. They pay $300 a month for 45 years. That's cut and dry. The other person A, they basically, on a 10-year window, they have a $300 a month payment for half that period of time. So a
15-year window.
Okay.
A third of the time, the first 5 years, they have the $300 a month payment. And then for the last 10 years, you know, they've paid off their car and they're taking that $300 a month and putting it into index funds.
Okay. And so basically they're going to have the single car for 15 years, of those years, they're going to have a payment and they're going to end up needing to get three cars over the period of that 45 year.
Yep, exactly. Okay. And again, you know, I tried to make this as conservative as possible. I assume no residual value. The car was actually absolute junk. So yeah, so that person, you know, 30 years, they, you know, of that 45 year period, they were putting $300 a month into Vanguard for 30 of those 45 years, right? So 10 years for each cycle. That's $108,000 that they put in actual contributions. You know, the 300 a month times 12 months times 30 years is $108,000. But as we know from the beauty of compound interest, that's not what they're sitting at. That's not the balance they're sitting at year 45. Do you want to take a guess, Jonathan, of what the balance is?
I would imagine it's upwards of 500,000, somewhere between 500,000 and 700,000.
Yeah, that's a pretty good guess. The, you know, according to my calculations, they end up with $742,000.
Wow. That's so cool. So you know, this is every single person. This is every single person between the age of 20 and 65. That's how much you're talking about.
Yep. So that's every regular person out there who's spending $300 a month every month on their car. And you know, let's be honest, most people are spending more than that, right? Yeah, that's a pretty low level car. I mean, any kind of SUV, minivan, you know, God forbid, BMW or Mercedes-Benz or any of these things that people are spending, like, you know, that changes the calculation dramatically. Again, this is like as conservative as I could possibly come up with, right? And it's still $742,000. So person A, just by being smart, and we would argue not even that smart, right? They're not buying used cars. They're not, you know, they're just being a little bit smarter than the next guy. $742,000 is what they have additionally in their retirement, their accounts, their net worth at the end of this 45-year period over the schmuck next door who paid for his car every single month. So that is as stark of an example
manage
as I can come
payment.
Up
with. Stay away from me. Stay away from me, dude.
Right, that's man? Awesome. Isn't that incredible, though?
Oh, yeah. It's $1 million decision right there. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So, yeah. So that's the high level overview. And, you know, that's a, you know, just a quick 10 minute overview.
But just the takeaway has to be, I mean, like the halfway point takeaway has to be when you finish your car payment, that does not mean that it's time for you to go get a new car. That's not a trade in and trade up situation, right? Don't be stupid. You bought a car, like it, drive it, get your use out of it. You know, if you bought it new, well, you've already taken the hit on depreciation. Now, at least, you know, bare minimum there. Now, at least go ahead and drive that sucker for another 10 years. The point of your life should not be to have the nicest car in the neighborhood. It should be to retire in your 40s, right? I mean, just think about this a little differently. Who do you want to be? Do you want to be the guy with the 26-inch rims that's, you know, just has Social Security at the age of 65 and you're still having to go check into your, you know, your grocery bag job at the store? Or do you want to, you know, retire in your late 30s, early 40s? The difference is this one decision. You know, that's how big of a deal just these little things are.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And I mean, this is a perfect example. And you know, you get into a lot of these issues when it comes to cars, right? Like, and so much of this is just silliness in my estimation or incorrect thinking. You know, it's like I've heard family members of mine saying like they're worried about their car breaking down, right? So their old car breaking down. Well, give me a break. Well, come on. I mean, that's so silly in this day and age of every single one of us having a cell phone, you being one call away from a tow truck or AAA even. If you're worried about a breakdown, buy AAA. What does it cost? $50, $60 a year? I mean, that's minuscule dollars. And, you know, when you're talking about $750,000 you're foregoing by worrying about something needless. I mean, cars are pretty reliable these days. Yeah. This is not the 1970s where there's, you know, planned obsolescence and, you know, by the car companies colluding and, you know, these cars are dying after 4 years. I mean, that's just not the way it works, you know? Like we saw at Camp Mustache, Jonathan, you know, and this is not a plug for Japanese cars, certainly, but, you know, a lot of people, the vast majority of the people who went to Camp Mustache had Toyotas and Hondas, right? I mean, these cars last forever. And there's no sign. I mean, I've got two 14-year-old Toyota and a Honda, and they're not going anywhere anytime soon. So I wouldn't worry about that. And, you know, it's also like you alluded to, Jonathan, like people are just so worried about like having the nicest car. And like, what a silly thing. I mean, how many miles a day are you really driving? Like nobody's that impressed with you. I mean, you see plenty of BMWs on the road. Like I'm not sitting there like impressed by some, you know, oh, look at how wealthy they are. You know, it's just like, to me, it's, man, that's really sad that guy spent so much money on that car. Mm. And you know, they have to worry about it all the time. They have to worry about it getting dinged up or, you know, having some kind of problem. Or like you talked about last week, like, you know, you need a new part on your Land Rover. Well, that's going to be a whole heck of a lot more expensive or difficult to come by than the part on my Honda Civic that millions and millions of people have. So, you know, it just keeps adding on itself. And, you know, a lot, the other argument also is like, oh, it's only a few $100 a month. I can afford that. Well, of course you can afford it. I can afford a Maserati if I wanted one. You know, I can afford anything, but I choose not to because I get no value from
because
it.
Because you choose FI, right?
Yep. I choose FI. That's, hey, I set that up for you, man. That's
you did.
Perfect.
I love it. That's awesome. Oh, it's totally true though. And just because, you know, you can afford the payments, but can you afford $742,000? I mean, that's just, when I see a brand new car, you know, driving on the road, I see a payment. You just, people that have millions of dollars or have $1 million more than likely have gotten there by using the tools that we talked about. Now they may not be in the quote unquote FI community, but usually if you make it to $1 million plus net worth, you do it by earning a significant amount of money and then putting a large portion of that aside. And it's very difficult to put a large portion of that aside if it's all tied up in car payments. That's basically what it comes down to.
Yeah. And I mean, this touches on, you know, the famous book, The Millionaire Next Door, right? It's, you know, very rarely is the guy in the McMansion with the BMW actually wealthy, actually a millionaire. Sure, there are some that, you know, just make oodles of money and can afford to waste it on frivolous stuff. But most normal people, even, you know, upper middle class people who are, you know, executive levels, you know, you just, even if you make $150,000, $200,000, like that goes really quickly when you're spending a ton of money on your fixed expenses, like your car and your house. And, you know, it just, those people just, they aren't wealthy because they're spending all their money. They have no net worth because it's just expense after expense. And, you know, that's just not how I think about life. I think about it over this long term. And, you know, Jonathan, like another really amazing thing when you think about it is, how many people do you know after 45-year working career even have $740,000?
Not very many.
Not very many. You can, you know, not many at all. Maybe none, you know, yeah. Which, I mean, if you really want to think on a societal level, like, you know, we set this up as a minuscule thing, right? Like it's $300 a month in savings for 30 years out of 45. That's really not very much money when you think about it. And that person has $742,000 at the end of it, right? I mean, like, talk about such, I mean, that this should really be hitting home to everybody out there. Like, think about how little that is. Obviously, I hope and I expect many or most of you are saving more than $300 a month. And, you know, that's going to add up to $742,000 if you, you know, get the 8% compounding interest. And that's only 30 out of 45 years of savings. Hopefully you're doing many multiples of that. And you're, I mean, many of us are going to have millions upon millions of dollars. But you, then you hear these horror stories about how people have saved nothing over, you know, 50% of, you know, whatever, I'm making this up, but 50% of Americans have less than $3,000 saved up or something like that. Like, that's crazy talk. I mean, that means they're saving absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
But I mean, even just normal people who think they're financially responsible sure as heck aren't ending up with $700,000 at the end of their working careers. And like, where did it all go? Again, they're not choosing FI. They're not choosing anything at that point. They're choosing to spend every dollar they have. And that's crazy to me.
And two other things come to mind. One, Brad and I don't normally work in 40-year timelines in terms of like the math that we do, because we're focused on, because when you do all these little things, you don't need 40 years. It's actually pretty cool. These tools are so powerful that 10 to 20 will take care of it for you. But the reality is most of us do have a 40-year timeline in which that we will own cars. So that's reasonable for this scenario to talk about it. And you do just make the one thing, make the one choice that Brad just laid out for you. It's worth $750,000. I mean, that's big, right? That's an actionable tip right there. Do this one thing, $750,000. And the other half of that is, this is where I think our audience appreciates it. Brad and I have, you know, different perspectives on, you know, what to spend money on. And I don't really have a problem with nice cars, with expensive cars, in the same way that maybe Brad does. But I do have a problem with you sacrificing your financial future to get it now, because you deserve it now, because you're working, you know, 60 hours a week, 80 hours a week. So you deserve the nice car now. No, that's why you have to work 60 hours a week, 80 hours a week. It's because you're making those stupid decisions now. You know, if you're worth $5 million, do whatever you want, bro. That's fine. I'm not worried about it. You've made it. You're there. You've got what you need. It is a very small portion of your disposable income. It's cool. That's fine. That's a value choice. That's fine. But if you make that choice to do it right now, you're robbing yourself, you're robbing your spouse, your partner, you're robbing your kids of the financial freedom that you could have within the next 10 to 15 years by having that, making that choice now. Just think about it. And then, you know, if you still decide to do it, that's fine. That's on you. But now, at least after we do this little discussion today, you have the math here in front of you and you can make a decision with more information.
Yeah, that's a great point, Jonathan. And you know, I don't like to sit here and be holier than thou. You know, I know it can be.
I threw you under the bus. I'm sorry.
Yeah, man. No,
it was just
good.
to make a point.
No. I can be a little bit of a jerk sometimes when it comes to my deeply held position. You know, I mean, in my heart of hearts, do I think spending money on a car is incredibly unintelligent? Yes, I honestly do. I think it's incredibly unintelligent. But, you know, in your example of the guy with $5 million, like, does it make any difference if he spends $50,000 on a BMW? No, of course it doesn't. I mean, right. That's fine. Like, would I choose to spend my money that way? No, I absolutely wouldn't. But that's not the guy we're talking about here, right. as you mentioned in your comment. It's the people who are robbing themselves and robbing their futures just to have a nice car and to impress their friends for 2 minutes when they roll up with their expensive car.
That's exactly right. Okay, so that was essentially part one of this episode. That's the high level picture. That's the end game. $745,000, and frankly, that isn't even optimized nearly as well as it could be. That was Brad taking a look at it really from back in 2013. That's just very simple math. That's a 40-year timeline, and it's just across the board. That basically is going to apply to everybody. But when you get down in the weeds, you have to look at your specific situation. You have to look at your specific car, and you want to think about, what is my car actually costing me? And there is some math that you can use to more or less convert everything to apples, right? So that you can then figure out, all right, in my specific situation, this is what my car's costing me. And then maybe based on this math, this is what I can do to win. So that's what, you know, my half of this article is really going to be focusing on. So this was really hard for me just because I've told y'all before, I have a really bad track record with cars. So this is not me preaching at you and telling you exactly what to do. You know, I've actually taken the time to figure out the math, and all this is just me figuring out a way to present it to you in a way that's obvious and makes sense. And it makes sense to me, and I've shown it to Brad, and he's more or less on the same page with me, but we're going to try to take a look at it with you. And if you have any further questions, you know, leave us a voicemail, which we've set up the option on choosefi.com, or you can send us an email at feedback@choosefi.com. So let me give you just a couple examples, and so you'll have something to compare it to. These are just three cars that I've, over the last several years, that I've purchased. So number one, a 2006 Nissan Sentra. It was purchased. It was 3 years old, purchased for $13,000. I think it had 30 to 40,000 miles on it at the time. Now it has 100,000 miles, has no mechanical issues, still driving pretty well. So that was a pretty good one. Then there was a 2007 Mazda SUV. It was a turbo. It was purchased cash on Craigslist for $9,000. Tons of mechanical issues. Had to put about $3,000 in repairs in it. Ended up selling it a couple years later for like $1,000. So just was a money pit. Horrible, horrible. And then after that was a 2015 Jeep Compass purchased. It was 1 year old, had 10,000 miles on it. Had a 5-year warranty included. It was $18,000. So, you know, I'm not going to necessarily get into the math on those specific ones for you. I'm just going to share. Those are different cars that I've purchased over the last several years. They're all extremely different cars. They're very difficult, different situations. And just looking at it at face value, it might be difficult to compare them. So this guide is kind of a way to take all those different scenarios and convert them into something that's apples to apples. Does that sound like a good idea, Brad?
Yeah, sounds good. I'm excited to learn more about it.
Okay, so we're going to have to go through this slowly because this is math on a podcast. And historically, Brad and I have done a pretty good job at doing that, but it's always a very fine line between too many numbers and too many equations. But we're going to try and go through it one piece at a time, and then we're going to come up with an answer for you. So in order to tell a story that involves numbers, you always have to have some assumptions. And so here's what we're going to start with. Let's say your car falls in one of these three scenarios. You either purchased a brand new car. So our brand new cars, they're going to cost $30,000. You purchased a 5-year-old car. That car could be purchased for $15,000, or you purchased a 10-year-old car for $5,000. Again, there could be wildly different scenarios, but Brad, is that a reasonable place to start?
Yeah, I think that sounds good. So okay. We got $30,000 for the new car.
Yep.
$15,000 for the 5-year-old and $5,000 for the 10-year-old.
Yeah.
All right. That's very reasonable.
Okay. And so basically one of the things you're seeing is there's a big depreciation hit over the first 5 years. And then obviously it slows down a little bit between a 5-year-old car and a 10-year-old car. Just keep that in mind. Now, all these cars are going to be driven for 10 years. It doesn't matter which car you pick. You know, the plan is you get this car and you drive it for 10 years. So a new car after 10 years, we'll assume that it still has, you know, $5,000 worth of residual value. A 5-year-old car that you drive for 10 years would have about $1,500 worth of residual value, so very little. And then a 10-year-old car, you're basically driving it into the ground. So it's 20 years old at the end of 10 years, so it has no value, $0. And so the very first thing you look at then is, what is my 10-year depreciation cost? You have to do that across the board. Now, keep in mind, I'm describing this to you now. Inside the show notes will be the Excel sheets that we're using, so you can go back to that immediately as a reference. You don't have to go completely from what we're saying. You may even want to follow along, but hopefully the story makes sense as we're telling it. So the first and most obvious cost that you calculate when you're calculating the cost of car ownership is your depreciation cost. Now, that's very simple math. It's what you purchased it for and then minus what you're able to sell it for at the end. So for the new car, there was a 10-year depreciation cost of $25,000. For the 5-year-old car that you sold for $1,500, there was a $13,500 depreciation. And then for the 10-year-old car that you sold, that you had no value left in at the end of 10 years, you know, that one essentially just had $5,000 in depreciation cost. So you can break that down into an average annual cost, just dividing that number by 10. And that's going to give you a baseline for cost. So we're assuming that a new car has an average depreciation cost of $2,500 a year. A five-year-old car would have an average depreciation cost of $1,350 a year. And the 10-year-old car would have a depreciation cost of $500 a year. So that is just, that's the baseline right here. And you got to think about this in terms of real dollars. This is going on. This is what it's costing you every single year. So if you have a brand new car, every single year, that car is costing you $2,500. That's real dollars. You got to think about it that way.
Yeah, just to jump in, the thing that sticks out to me the most is the difference between the average annual depreciation cost for the new car and just the five-year-old car. It's about $1,200 difference per year, right, which is $100 a month. And Jonathan, as you and I have spoken about on a prior podcast, $100 a month invested into Vanguard at an 8% annual return over 20 years is worth $60,000. So yeah, you would have $60,000 in your pot just from, you know, that investment. So, you know, this is not an insignificant amount of money by any means,
right,
just from that one difference.
And there's always a double value there. And if we talk to Matt Fientist, a triple value there, but the first value is just what you calculated, the compound interest. By saving the $1,200 a year, that's going to be worth $60,000 in value. That's the amount that will accrue in Vanguard. But on the same note, the other half of that coin, we also always look at the safe withdrawal rate, the 4% rule. And so if you need $1,200 less in expenses to live each year, then that means that you need $30,000 less in your 401k account or in your investment account in order to retire, in order to hit your FIRE number. So you can decrease that FI number by $30,000. Am I right about that, Brad?
Yeah, that sounds exactly right. And yeah, that's really a very powerful concept.
So I didn't even include that. That's a bonus. That's a bonus. That wasn't even included in the true cost of car ownership. That we'll talk about that later. We're thinking about doing one on as a review of the Mad Fientist article on the triple value of income, because it's such a powerful article. But for right now, what we know is new cars, the average annual cost just from depreciation is $2,500. The five-year-old car is $1,350, and the 10-year-old car is $500. So next, and honestly, this is another place where you could probably make a more aggressive stance, but we're going to call it the annual opportunity cost. So let's say that with a new car, you purchase it for $30,000, and it doesn't matter whether you finance it or whether or not you pay for it cash. But let's just say that instead of you making that choice, let's say you bike to work. Because you're not doing that, there's a cost to you not investing that $30,000. And so for the $30,000 car, that opportunity cost is $2,400 a year. For the five-year-old car, that opportunity cost is $1,200 a year. And for the 10-year-old car, it's $400 a year. And actually, in reality, over time, that would actually go up due to compound interest. But just for the sake of giving you a flat number, you have depreciation cost, and now you have opportunity cost. So the new car has an opportunity cost of $2,400. Five-year-old car has an opportunity cost of $1,200. 10-year-old car has an opportunity cost of $400. Let's keep that in mind.
So with that, just to be clear, because I wasn't 100% positive at first, you're saying if you had put, instead of plunking down $30,000 for this new car, you are putting that $30,000 in Vanguard and assuming an 8% return. So $30,000 times 8% is the $2,400.
Exactly.
Opportunity cost of actual income each year. Yeah, okay, that makes perfect sense. And I just wanted to put a sidebar in here. You know, guys, we're always assuming this 8% return, and you know that is obviously like an average. You know, many years you'll see significantly more than that. There'll be years, obviously, in the stock market where it goes down. I mean, 8% is just an average. So when we throw out these numbers, we're not saying this with absolute dead-on specifics that we guarantee you, you know, your residual value, or if you had invested this money, that it'll be worth X to, you know, to the exact dollar. I mean, there's no way we can do that. Hopefully everybody out there understands that, but it is important to mention from time to time that, you know, this is just a very big assumption, but over a long enough period of time and based on historical returns and our average, you know, of this 8%, this is what we assume. So, you know, please keep that in mind.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think from like 1975 to 2015, we saw closer to a 12%, but there, it could certainly be less than that. And, you know, it could always be more than that. But 8% is just this nice conservative number that allows us to give you a pseudo optimistic, but also a reasonable rate of return over a long period of time. And for consistency, it's the number that we always use. Okay. Now, the next thing we have to do, and I probably oversimplified this, but again, we're trying to get an apples to apples situation, is I lumped in maintenance, taxes and inspection, and the average cost of insurance. So to do this, basically I said, you know, maintenance on a new car is going to be less, obviously, than maintenance on an old car. So, you know, a new car, let's just say on average over time, it's about $16 a month in maintenance. On a five-year-old car, it's about $25 a month. And on a 10-year-old car, it goes up to $33 a month. And so, you know, you average them out over the course of the year. But on the backside of that, with taxes and inspections, on a new car, your taxes and inspection cost more. On an old car, your taxes, you know, are less generally. And so when you lump those together, you know, as one goes up, the other goes down, I felt like you could pretty safely just say for both of them, your cost in general, it's $500 annually combined. That's just across the map. It's a broad oversimplification, but for the sake of allowing us to just make everything consistent across the board, your annual cost on maintenance and taxes on a new car or an old car is going to be $500 a year. Brad, is that okay? Do you think I've missed anything there? Do I need to? I think it's
I think it's a reasonable assumption. Yeah, it's impossible to know. And of course, you know, when you were saying the, you know, $16 a month in maintenance, you know, that of course is, it, you know, you're not going to have $16 a month. It's just, you know, saying you're going to have a couple $100 a year, you know, maybe in maintenance on a new car and, you know, double that on a 10-year-old car. And, you know, I think those are reasonable assumptions. So please, you know, don't get caught up if you're out there listening. Like, we're not saying you're going to have exactly $16 a month.
You're right. Yeah. And I even said on the side, they're like $200, $200 a year for the new car, and 400 for the 10-year-old car. So yeah, you're right. All right. And then on the same note, insurance. Insurance is a reality. Most of you have or probably should have insurance. I would imagine that on a new car, especially one where you have a payment, you're going to want to get comprehensive insurance. And that would be around $100 a month. And on an old car that you don't have a payment, like Brad, you don't care if someone bumps you in the parking lot, right? If you lose a few paint flecks, who cares? It's just a vehicle to get you from A to B. You're only going to have liability just to protect you in case you actually mess something up or, you know, do something wrong. And so the new car is going to cost you $1,200 a year in insurance, and the old car is going to cost you $600 a year in insurance. So that's most of it. The last piece of this that we have to figure out is gas. And gas is pretty simple too, but it's dependent on your particular situation, but it's very, very simple to calculate. For the most part, you just calculate your miles to work one way. So if you work 15 miles away from your home and then you work 5 days a week, over the course of a year, that would be 8,250 miles. And then you just, you know, put that in equation with the cost of gas per gallon and you can come up with your number. So then it depends on the only other piece you really need to know is what sort of gas mileage you get. So obviously with an SUV or a truck, you're going to get worse gas mileage than you would with some sort of, you know, Econo hatchback, like a Honda Fit or something like that. So let's just assume that there's two different types of cars you could get. One that's your gas guzzler, maybe your SUV or truck that gets 15 miles to the gallon. And then the other option is your little economy vehicle, your Econo hatchback, and that gets 30 miles to the gallon. So, you know, if you look at those two particular situations, the amount of gas that you're going to go through is going to be basically cut in half, depending on which one you want with. So the gas guzzler, the annual cost of gas is going to be $1,200. And for the Econo hatchback in that particular scenario, it's going to cost about $600. And that's it. Then we've gotten through all the variables.
All right. So yeah, that's a good lead in. So
we had to do that. I know that was tedious. Hopefully you followed it, but that allows us to now set up the true cost of car ownership. And again, I think this Excel sheet is going to be very useful for you. This is one of those that you can very easily take and you can add in all your own numbers. I've actually updated it so you can edit, you know, how many miles you drive to work. You can add in what sort of gas mileage you get, and all the numbers will update based on that. So, and then even if you really wanted to, you could go in and put in, you know, what the purchase price for your car was, and you could go into Kelley Blue Book and see what your car's selling for right now. So you could very easily adapt this to your particular situation. But once you do that, now you can actually calculate the true cost of car ownership. And here's what I came up with. For a new car, Once you add in the depreciation, the opportunity cost, the insurance, the maintenance, the taxes, you know, whether or not it's a gas guzzler or a gas sipper, the total cost for a brand new car that's a gas guzzler is going to be $7,800 a year. And for a gas sipper, a brand new car, $7,200 a year. Isn't that incredible?
Wow. That's way more than I would have even guessed. Honestly, yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah. That's how much it's costing you each freaking year. That's how much it's costing you each year. Now, just to roll through these quickly, if you have a 5-year-old car, the total cost for a gas guzzler is going to be $4,800. And for a gas sipper, it's going to be $4,200. And then finally, for a 10-year-old car, you're looking at $3,200 for a gas guzzler and $2,600 for a gas sipper. So that's where you're landing right now. You know, there's no, what I found out after I did this is, first of all, there's no way to win with a car. You just can't win. You can't. It's a losing situation. Now, that's why when people say their biggest financial secret was a bike, that's the math right there. That's what they figured out. Remember, for every single $1,200 you save, that's $60,000, you know, in 20 years, right, Brad? The $60,000 in that short 20-year timeline. It's even more than that in a 40-year timeline that Brad used for his earlier equation. It's way more than $120,000. So there's a reality that if you bike, you're going to win. And that's why Jeremy talks about it. That's what the math tells us. So when you math this thing up, that's what you find out. But, you know, on the scale, knowing that cars are a losing proposition, you can still win inside the margins. And if you pick the 10-year-old gas sipper instead of the brand new gas guzzler, you're going to save $5,000 a year or more. I mean, how incredible is that?
Yeah, that's huge. I mean, $5,000 a year, just using your example, you know, that for every $1,200 a year, it's $60,000 sitting in that pot of money you have at 20 years from now. You know, so that's four times that, right? So it's $240,000 just by making that decision of buying that 10-year-old car. So, I mean, that these are real dollars, obviously. And, you know, listen, Jonathan and I we're not like Mr. Money Mustache who, you know, advocates the bicycling and, you know, really lives that as his life. I don't think either of us have any comprehension that we'll ever stop driving. Like, that's just not in our personal
once,
life.
Once, you know what, man, once I got Defy, once I'm on the other side and working, I might get one of those urban mopeds. I could see myself doing that. I really could, but I'm with you. I'm definitely not in the mustache camp quite there.
Yeah. And you know, more power to them, but you know, so we're not sitting here and saying like, you need to sell your cars and go buy bicycles. That's not it at all. It's just realizing how much these cars cost you every year and just trying to be a little bit smarter. So, you know, just using Jonathan's example of the brand new car versus the 10-year-old car, if you make that choice to buy the 10-year-old car, you're in all likelihood going to have about $250,000 more sitting in that pot of money 20 years from now. That those are real dollars. So that's what the takeaway is.
Well, and you know, and that's for every single time you make that decision. So that's just a 10-year window, right? So like you talked about that guy over 45 years, going back to the larger timeline now, he does this. You said he purchased a car every 15 years, right? So there's at least 2 to 3 of these purchasing decisions. And each time you make that decision, you know, that's the implications for it down the road. So, you know, once you see how the math goes, you can really start to figure out, you know, what choice you want to make. Now, I don't know necessarily if I would go with the 10-year-old car. You know, I certainly think you can get a great value. I was just looking online. You can right now buy a 10-year-old Honda Fit, a 2007 Honda Fit. You can get one for $5,000 right now. Like right. That's a reality. So if you want to win, you know, that sounds about as good as you could get. That meets all the criteria, and that has less than 100,000 miles. And cars these days, especially those little Hondas, those suckers make it up to 200,000. So you're going to get 100,000 miles out of that thing easy. And then they're incredibly cheap to repair. So there are ways that you can game this out. And there are people that have figured out actually how to truly win or not lose money on cars. I have met them. And obviously the key is the only way to win is you have to buy something significantly below Blue Book, you know, even on a 10-year-old car. Mostly you have to probably get a 10-year-old car that's significantly below Blue Book. You have to drive it for several years and then you would resell it for a profit and then you would rinse and repeat. But you can only lose money on cars over a long enough period of time. So, you know, the easiest way, the path of least resistance, would be to just take a look at the chart, see where your comfort level lies, know what the math is, and then make a value choice based on what you're willing to do. And to me, it seems like the only reasonable decision would be to go with a 5 or 10-year-old gas sipper, which is not particularly limiting, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I agree totally. And you know, hopefully for the audience that this episode was useful. I know, you know, we had a lot of numbers thrown around there and we had two totally different scenarios. So, you know, one does not relate to the other. And obviously, you know, in my scenario, we're talking 750,000 and Jonathan's it's 250,000. But, you know, regardless, the big takeaway is this is a significant amount of money and you need to be really smart and intentional about your cars and don't just say, oh, I'll manage the $300 payment and just kind of go off on your merry way. Like that's just not a sensible alternative. You know, this is real money. And, you know, we just ask that you think about it, just like anything in life and in the pursuit of FI is just be intentional and spend how you deem fit. And, you know, that's really our ask of the audience from listening to this episode. So yeah, thank you very much.
Very, very cool. All right, guys, this brings us to the end of this particular podcast, The Ultimate Guide to the True Cost of Car Ownership. Our idea when we make some of these is to create a point of reference for you for these individual pillars of FI. And we want to make this something that you can grab it, take hold of it, and implement it in your life. It's actionable. It's simple. It's not something that is out of reach. And it's something that you can share with your friends and your neighbors. And together we can create a happier, less stressed, freer society that, you know, brings people together and actually gives us all a baseline of financial independence. This stuff does not have to be out of reach. It doesn't have to be overly complex. But what it does take is having somebody model it for you and show you how it might fit into your own personal framework. And that's what ChooseFI really more and more is becoming all about. So this is the podcast where we help middle class build wealth one life hack at a time. And I hope that you're appreciating that and that you're benefiting from the information that we're trying to give to you. So thank you so much for listening. Thank you for your feedback. If you want more FI hacks, life hacks, tax hacks, any additional information that we have to offer, you can get on our email list by texting ChooseFI to 44222. That's one word, ChooseFI 44222. Get on our email list today and join our community. We are excited to have you and fire is spreading. So I hope you join us next week as we continue to go down the road less traveled.
You've been listening to Choose FI Radio Podcast, where we help middle class America build wealth one life hack at a time.